You decide to have a lazy evening with your partner. So you grab popcorn and some hot chocolate and get ready to obsess over your favorite TV series again. Somehow, you fall asleep in each other's lap and wake up the next day, still in the jeans and t-shirt you wore the day before. What if I told you that you're super lucky this happened to you? My guest today, Jackie, wishes that's how her evening transpired, the evening her house burned down when a freak accident, by way of a thunderstorm, struck her carport.
The fire happened Sunday night. I couldn't get a hold of my insurance company Sunday night. I called first thing Monday morning. They did answer then. And then they said, we can't really do anything until Tuesday morning. Well, we needed our windows boarded up because they were busted and anybody could just walk in and steal our stuff if they wanted to.
The sad reality was the insurance company, in Jackie's words, didn't have her back. They had nowhere to go. Thank goodness someone called the Red Cross for them, so they got a few $100s and then ended up staying in a hotel that night. That's not all. When it was clear that Jackie's home was totally gone, and I mean like it burnt to a crisp, she embarked on an 8-month fight to get what was owed. So what was a holdup and who was to blame? Welcome to Beyond the Dollar with me, Sarah Lee Kane, where we have deep and honest conversations about how money affects our well-being. Jackie Lambert, an earned media consultant living in Gainesville, Florida, comes on the show to talk about the time her house burnt down and had to fight with the insurance company to pay her $175,000. She goes into detail about who she's hired, what she regrets not doing before buying a home insurance policy, and what she's most thankful for throughout this entire ordeal. Before we start, I want you to know that there are no cut and dry answers when it comes to money management. That's why it's important for you to dial in on your values and use that as your guide. I have a free values-based spending guide that walks you through some juicy questions and how you can start using them to allocate your money. To grab it, head over to beyondthedollar.co/values. All right, get ready, grab a seat, and let's go beyond the dollar. Jackie, welcome to Beyond the Dollar. I'm really curious about what happened to your house.
Oh, let me tell you what happened to my house. Well, it's not my house anymore, and we'll get to that later. We just came up on the 1-year anniversary of the hardest thing that I've ever had to deal with in my adult life. It is that one late night around 11 p.m., there was a really bad thunderstorm, and my husband and I were watching TV indoors in our first house. So that house was my pride and joy and something I thought I would own the rest of my life. And we heard a few loud strikes. One of those strikes turned off our television set. So we decided it was probably time to go to bed. My husband woke me up about 45 minutes later, informing me that he was awoken by a glow outside our window. He had noticed that our carport was on fire and he urged us to evacuate immediately. I just found the closest pair of clothes I could throw on and I ran out the door. I couldn't really see because I didn't have my glasses on, but I noticed that flames were basically engulfing, I want to say like a quarter of our house already near the front, and it was spreading to the front door. We called 911. When your house is on fire that badly, the only thing you can think about is why aren't the firefighters here yet? I was freaking out and I must have been screaming because the 911 operator requested that my husband hand me the phone and she started doing breathing exercises with me to try to calm me down. They probably showed up like a minute later, but it felt like an eternity. They eventually put out the fire. Basically, long story short, our house burnt down. When you look at it, it didn't fall to the ground like you would imagine in the movies. The whole house was standing, but it just looked really burnt to a crisp.
I'm imagining turkey during Thanksgiving and you carve all the meat and then the skeletons left. Is that kind of how the house looked like after it basically burnt down?
I would say not the whole house, probably like a quarter of the house. The wood frame that you could see looked like, yeah, like a burnt up turkey carcass. That's a good way of putting it.
So how long did you guys have that house for before this happened?
Not very long, honestly. We bought the home February 2018, and then the fire happened August 2019.
Wow. So yeah, a little over a year. So this happens. They put the fire out. What was going through your head then?
I guess I was just thinking about how much of a hassle the next few months were going to be. That night, I didn't realize just how bad the damage was. I imagined that we would work with insurance, the house would get fixed, and we would just move right back in, and that it would probably take a long time. I did not realize then that that wasn't really reality.
So the next day you went back to the house, and then that's when you really realize the extent, I guess you can say, of the damage. Is that right? Yeah.
It's funny, we met so many people the days after the fire that it's hard to keep track of everybody. But somebody told us we needed to go to a hotel and to call insurance to let them know. I called the 24/7 hotline of my insurance company and nobody answered. That's like a reality that is bananas to me. Like, I don't know how you can legally do that, but we tried a lot of different phone numbers. So that was one challenge we had initially that night. I think it was the fire investigator. She's so cool. She's an EMT cop, like fire investigator. She has all these credentials under her belt, and her job is just to research how fires happen. She called the Red Cross, and so they came that night and gave us an ATM card, preloaded debit card that had like $450. And they said, go to a hotel. I never thought I would ever need help from the Red Cross. That's crazy to me. At the time, if you could imagine somebody in their 20s who bought their first home, and I work from home and run a pretty successful consultancy, and my husband has a stable job. Like, you just think you're on top of the world and that nothing can touch you. If you feel like you can just pay your bills and you can get by, you would never in a million years think that you would need the Red Cross for anything. But that night it was really helpful. I mean, we could have put it on our credit card, but still the fact that there was help out there for us, it really was touching. It was like feeling supported in our time of loss.
So you called, they didn't answer. Did you get somebody eventually?
Not until the next morning. We were basically instructed to just call them in the morning. I called as soon as they opened and I mentioned, hi, you guys have a 24/7 hotline supposedly, but when I called, no one answered. And she basically just skirted the subject. So I didn't push the matter. What happened then was they said, okay, we are going to send what's called a field adjuster. And so the field adjuster, they go to the scene and they assess the damage to determine how much damage actually happened. They couldn't show up that day. They were going to show up the next day. So the fire happened Sunday night. I couldn't get a hold of my insurance company Sunday night. I called first thing Monday morning. They did answer then. And then they said, we can't really do anything until Tuesday morning. Well, we needed our windows boarded up because they were busted and anybody could just walk in and steal our stuff if they wanted to. I mean, quite frankly, they just didn't have our backs. I made the case for getting somebody there that day to board up the windows at least, or else we would have to do that, which the day after your house burns down, do you really feel like going to Home Depot and boarding up your own windows? They eventually caved and sent a construction company that specializes in these kinds of things. The inspector showed up. He took a look at the roof and the trusses, and he could tell that the damage was so extensive that he looked at us. And he said, what I'm looking at looks like a total loss. It doesn't make sense for me to give an estimate. Let's get a construction company over here to give an official itemized estimate because we know it's going to be a total loss anyway. That's when it hit me like, this is really bad. At the time, I didn't know what total loss was. Anybody who signs up for insurance should know this term. It means that the damages exceed what the insurance will cover. We were covered at $152,000. So what that meant was the insurance would cover repairing the house for up to $152,000. With total loss is that it's not worth fixing. You're better off taking the money and putting it towards another home. So the construction company came and they gave an estimate that was over the limit. It was 157, something like that. But that alerted the desk adjuster. So the desk adjuster, it's confusing. There's so many people working on your case. And it's a for-profit business, so they really only care about the bottom line. It's just sad reality. So there's the field adjuster and the desk adjuster. Similar sounding names, but totally different. So the field adjusters who came out to do the inspection, desk adjuster is on the phone with you, and that's the person you try to talk to. Which, by the way, they're a pain in the ass to try to get on the phone. It's horrible. And they're always like, oh, I care about you, and I'm so sorry for your loss. And I'm sure they do, but that's just something they're trained to say on the phone. When the desk adjuster saw that, A, there was no estimate from the field adjuster, and B, there was only one estimate, and it was from a construction company going above the limit. It's so confusing. It basically sat on our desk for a while, then I finally got a hold of somebody who told me that my adjuster had changed and I was now handed off to another adjuster. I did not understand that. Now, there's something in Florida called the Homeowners Insurance Policyholders Bill of Rights, and it states that you should be entitled to your money 90 days after a tragedy. I was probably on day 90 when I got switched to the second adjuster. I finally got a hold of the second desk adjuster claiming he used to work in construction. He saw the pictures and he can tell it's a total loss just by looking at it. He said, I'm going to call the second construction company. They'll give the evidence that we need in order to deem it officially a total loss. That is going to be the key to getting your money. That construction company starts dragging their feet, and they probably took, no joke, weeks to even show up to the job. Then it took probably a good month before they even submitted their proposal. The worst part is, when they submitted their proposal, it was well below the estimated damages that the first construction company came up with. It was at about $70,000, which I learned was a pretty unrealistic number. There's something in the industry, I think it's called undercutting. The idea is that they give a really low bid. That way they could get the job. Once they get the job, they'll send revised work orders in order to get more money. They basically wanted to rebuild the house. That was an issue because then the desk adjuster, who admitted to me on the phone that is completely unrealistic and told me what tactic they were using, he felt screwed over because his manager then said, if a construction company is willing to fix the house for this cheap, then let's just use them. Even if they ask for more money, we'll just pay them. At the time, I was still in the mindset that I wanted to move back into that house and that I wanted to rebuild. So while that was happening, I independently called my own contractors that I wanted to use, and they gave a pretty high estimate. It was going to be over $200,000 to repair. But I figured if I get the $150 from insurance, that's $50K I have to come up with myself. And I had enough in savings that I could afford to pay it. And the plans were really cool. When that estimate came back to $70K, I wasn't sure what to do. So there's something called a public adjuster, and their jobs are to be the middleman between insurance policyholder and the insurance company. And they charge a lot of money. I think they charge 10% of what you're entitled to from your insurance. So if you can imagine, we were expecting, $150 for construction alone, let alone, I think it was $75 for contents, which was the stuff that we had in the house. He could make a lot of money because let's say the total came out to $200,000, this guy would get $20,000 in his pocket. I didn't want to pay for one, but I ended up doing it. And I hate spending a lot of money on stuff. Like, I'm a little bit of a cheapskate myself, especially when it feels like something I should be able to do myself. What I felt like I did was I caved and I said, fine. I say caved because they're a bit like ambulance chasers, and I was getting pamphlets on my door from these kinds of people. And I'm like, okay, it's like kind of a seedy business. I don't want to deal with them. But there's so much money on the table. I was like, okay, best case scenario, let's say I walk away even with the $100,000 and I don't have to pay the 10%, fine. But if I can get double that, and even if I lose 20% of that or 10% of that, it's fine. There's so much money on the table, it's worth it. I have to say, I don't regret it at all. That was a good move. Although in retrospect, I saw the way he did his job and now I feel I could have done it on my own, but I just didn't have the tools at my disposal, and I don't think anyone really does. It's not a normal thing to deal with insurance. These people are like sharks without having a better name for it, honestly. So this is what he did. He hired a third construction company. And he said, the way we're going to combat this is we're going to provide them with our own evidence. We need to play their game. We are going to make sure that we use companies that use the same software as the insurance companies. That was the missing link. He called a construction company over. They gave their estimate, which was well above any of the initial estimates. They used the right software, and that was submitted officially through the insurance. We did the same thing with contents.
When you hired this public adjuster, how long was the process of dealing with the field adjuster, the desk adjuster, all of those things?
Oh, gosh, probably about 6 months.
Is it safe to assume you hired this person, basically you were just really fed up of dealing with it yourself?
Absolutely. It was horrible.
During this time, where were you living?
Oh, that's a good question. Week one, I was living at a hotel. Week two and three, I was living with my husband at a friend's house. By week four, we were signing a lease for an apartment. We lived there about 8 months.
While you were moving place to place, was this all taken care of by insurance, or did you have to pay this stuff out of pocket?
Great question. Theoretically, insurance did come through eventually, but it took a long time for that money to be delivered to us. We did have to pay for the first month's rent, last month's rent, and deposit out of pocket. The good news is that some previous coworkers of mine put together a GoFundMe. I remember when they did that, it was a day after the fire, thinking, I don't know why they're doing that. Like, I'm not going to need that money because insurance will come through. I'm really glad that they did. That money went into a special bank account that I opened just for the fire. I pulled from that bank account a lot before insurance money ever came. But one of them was to get first, last, and deposit, which was a lot of money. I mean, we found a place for $1,300 a month, which is not really cheap for that area. But we had no choice because we live in a college town and school had just started. So we had to come up with almost $4,000 just to secure our spot.
So now you hire this public adjuster. So this was after 6 months of dealing with insurance and being frustrated. Now that he got the construction company to submit the bid and the right software, do all the right things, what happened afterwards?
It was a waiting game, honestly. Now, the nice thing is he took all the responsibility out of our hands, which is so nice. I didn't have to sit on the phone and be on hold for hours. That was his job. I have to give him some credit. I know that every other day he was doing that for us and he was staying on top of them. I would say it probably took another month or two. I want to say it took him about a month to gather the evidence he needed. He submitted it, but still, despite all of that, the insurance company sat on our case, which from the outside, it looked like they were doing nothing. I'm not really sure what was going on the inside, but it seemed like it was just going to sit on their desk forever. It probably took about 8 months total to get our money after everything's said and done.
You had mentioned before, you're like, oh, in hindsight, I wish maybe I could have done this myself because now I know what he did. But it seems to me that he took all of the emotional labor off of your hands. Do you feel that is actually worth whatever you paid him in the end?
100%. There was days where I was just crying because getting on the phone with the insurance people, I couldn't get anywhere with them. And I feel like I'm really good at getting on the phone and demanding my needs, but they play games. And when it's something like a fire where you lost your home, I totally agree. I mean, I could grieve on my own and do my own thing. And I knew somebody had my back. Even though I know I'm smart enough to figure out how he did the job and I'm like, oh, shoot, that's how he won. I would agree. I would do it again in a heartbeat. I really would. It was worth the money.
So how much did you guys end up getting?
It was about $150 for the building and then $75 for contents. And then we paid him 10%. But it was worth it because we even did some self-reflection and I wouldn't have even known how to reach limit with our contents because he told us things that I hadn't thought about. He said, write down the light bulbs in your house, the blinds that you had, things that you don't think about, but they all have value and you can't use them after a fire.
I would assume most people would think about their documents or jewelry, higher ticket items and things like that. I'm curious, does the money come in a lump sum? Like, how does that work?
When you hire a public adjuster, his name gets put on the check with yours, which is like, ugh, what a pain. So you have to go to the bank with this guy. The hard part is we had different banks. His credit union wouldn't endorse checks over $100,000. What I did instead, I just opened up a credit union bank account at his bank because I'm like, if we all bank at the same institution, then we can get our money right away.
I probably would have done the same thing because it's what, minutes, maybe an hour max to open a bank account, depending on what you need versus having to contact the insurance company, considering the process you went through to even get the money, right?
Yeah, any way to avoid them. That was the goal.
You won the case, you went to the credit union with the adjuster, and then you got the money. So after all of that, was there a shift in sort of how you viewed the incident or even just money?
I felt lighter. I was starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel. Honestly, even though we dealt with some initial trauma, once we got that money in our hand, it honestly felt okay. That's not to say I'm not still sad about it, because I am, but life felt a lot more hopeful. I will say, though, it didn't even feel amazing until we found our second home. That was when we could move on and life could feel normal, because life hadn't felt normal since the fire.
Do you feel like you felt like you could move on at that point because now you're a homeowner again?
Yeah, it's funny. I didn't even realize how much I valued homeownership. I thought I valued the house that I bought, but the more time I spent away from it, the less I wanted to be there or even think about that particular property. The adjuster, when I was talking to him, he said, had you ever considered selling out? I said, no. He said, A, mathematically, financially, that makes more sense on paper because you won't have to go into debt in order to repair your home. Secondly, sometimes there's so much trauma and emotion attached to having that burned down house. A lot of people don't want to go back. The thought really took me aback. I'm like, how could you say that? I love that house. I'm always going to own that home. But the more I thought about it, and maybe the insurance company being a pain in my butt also helped, I just didn't want to be there anymore. One day, I asked my mom what she thought. I asked my friend Alyssa what she thought and some other friends. A lot of people said the same thing, that this is a really good opportunity to start over. Most people never get this opportunity, and you can really look at it through a positive light, and it can be very exciting. I'm really glad that public adjuster came into our lives, even if he was a very expensive friend to have for a while, because he saved us a lot of money. He really did.
When you were house hunting the second time, did you view it from a different lens this time? Because you had mentioned, my first home, I love it, I'm going to be there forever. Was that the same mindset you had for this one that you have now?
It was a whole new mindset. One thing I told my realtor, I used the same one, by the way, she was great. I told her, I said, I will not have emotional attachment to another home again. I mean that in a good way. I really want to view this as a comfortable place to live. And that's pretty much it. There's something very liberating about not having emotional attachment to an object. The fire really had me view things differently, particularly with home buying. I looked at it more so from a lens of, is this home what we actually want in terms of livability? No. Okay, let's just keep looking. Or, wow, I love this house, but it's kind of expensive. There will be other homes that are going to come up for sale. And so the search was honestly a lot more easygoing. We found one fairly quickly, actually a mile south of the burnt down house, which is kind of fun.
Do you have the same kind of mindset about your things now as well?
Absolutely. When we were living in that apartment, we were using donations from people from all over the community. So we had mismatched dishes, many of which we still use at our new house. Kitchen sets that aren't matching, things that I put importance into prior to the fire. Like, I wanted to have a house that looked like it was in a magazine, and I wanted to have the best of the best. There were moments where my husband and I were just sitting in the apartment after the fire, and we felt happier than we had been in a long time in a way, because life just felt a little more simpler, and you really do feel more connected to what's important, which I learned is really the relationships that you make with people. We talked earlier about how it's more so the gesture than the dollar amount. And I think that's so true in the meaning of life even. Yes, like having financial stability makes your life so much easier. And I'm so grateful to have that. But it's like those moments where you're just sitting around, just having an unsexy day, but like you can breathe and you're okay. You know that life's all right.
Is it safe to say you're with a different insurance company?
Yes. I was fortunate enough that I worked for a company called Student Loan Hero, and they were acquired by a company called LendingTree. So I had a little bit of a payout from that sale, and I was able to front the money for the second home when we found it prior to closing the insurance claim with the first house. So we were still dealing with insurance while buying this house. That was interesting because when it came to shopping for homeowners insurance, nobody wanted to cover us because we had an open fire claim. The good news is, and every state is different, but Florida has a company called Citizens, and they are a nonprofit state-run insurance company. It is by law that they cannot turn anyone down for insurance. So we went with them. I don't know how they're going to be if we do have to claim something, but they're nonprofit, state run. So I'm hoping that'll be easier. But I guess best case scenario is that our house doesn't get struck by lightning.
If there was one lesson that you've learned from all of this, what is it?
Read the paperwork of whatever you're signing up for. Insurance is not cheap, and it's hilarious how little anyone does research on this stuff before they just sign up, because it is a formality. You can't really buy a house without having insurance. In retrospect, I would have read the policy, no matter how boring it was, to understand what coverage A, coverage B, coverage C means, understand what it would mean if there was a total loss, what does that dollar amount look like, and read the reviews for the company that you work with. It's really important. One of the things I did was ask the adjuster in retrospect, like, did I mess up by hiring this insurance company? And he said, yeah, definitely. And he emailed me a list of what he called the good insurance companies and the bad insurance companies in the business. I just really didn't take matters into my own hands. I wish I had.
Thank you for all that, Jackie. Thank you so much for coming on Beyond the Dollar. You can find Jackie Lambert at jacquelinelambert.com. So it's JacquelinLambert.com or weearnmedia.com. Coming up next, I distill some of the takeaways that you can get from my conversation with Jackie, especially around home insurance and asking for help. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Jackie. Just so appreciated her coming on to talk about in so much detail exactly what happened and her fighting with the insurance company on all of those things. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't want to think about the worst case scenario, and I don't want to think about having to deal with insurance companies that aren't going to be helping you out or looking after you, right? And so it's really important, if anything, the biggest takeaway from this conversation is to think about the value that you get in what you pay. So for Jackie, and I know this is a thing that we all do, no judgment, no shame about it, is that we pick the cheapest thing or the thing that costs the lowest, and then we pick it, even though it's for something pretty important like life insurance or even health insurance, let's say in the US. And so I certainly don't, and I hope you don't get caught off guard if you paid for an insurance policy and you can't even redeem it, or the people that work for the company are not helpful at all, like what Jackie had experienced. So think about the actual value. So for her, when it came to home insurance company, she looked at what exactly was in the policy and then compare the costs. Of course, you want to pay as little as possible. That's obviously the case. I don't want to pay more than I have to, but it's really about what am I paying for? What am I getting in return for? What is the value that I'm getting, right? Like I repeated earlier. And that can be for anything that you buy or anything that you spend money on. Let's say you're hiring a financial planner, you're hiring someone to redo your bathroom, whatever it is, look very carefully at exactly what you're going to get, how much you're paying, and even do some extra research on the reputation of the company, the product, the service, whatever it is, so that you can be as informed as possible, whatever you're spending. And if we're going to go to the idea of you're spending money to protect yourself, to insure against something, that's really, really crucial. Now, in Jackie's case, yeah, she got her money stuff together. She had an emergency fund. She had enough savings for things. But $175,000 is a lot of money. So to be able to just throw down that much money for a new house or whatever it is not exactly feasible for many people. And so you want to be able to know that what you're protecting yourself against is going to be there for you, especially if your emergency fund or whatever money that you have isn't going to be enough, all right? And ultimately, what I really liked too is near the end of the conversation, we talked about what was really important. And so for Jackie, the house itself wasn't important anymore. It really was the relationships that she built and all of those other things. Now, it's not to say that you can't have your dream home, you can't have this wonderful matched dishware and furniture, but ultimately it really takes a lot of self-reflection to be like, okay, what is it that I value and what is it that I'm willing to put my time and energy into, all right? So I hope you, again, enjoy the conversation with myself and Jackie. Next week's episode is going to be a little bit different than some of the conversations you've heard so far in this season. It's actually just going to be me recapping some of these conversations and then using that to help you take some really small but mighty steps to help you break the cycle in your financial life. So I'm really looking forward to this. This is based on the feedback from so many people I've heard from so far. I do have one ask before I go, is if you enjoyed this episode or this show as a whole, please, please share an episode with a friend. It is going to help share and spread the mission of what we're doing around here at Beyond the Dollar, which is have deep and honest conversations about how money affects your well-being. All right, everyone, until next time, keep living beyond the dollar.